Hey everyone, it's time again to crack open a cold one and talk real estate with Mike Ferrante from Century 21 Homestar and the 21 Mike team, based in Cleveland, Ohio. We are chatting about all things real estate, from agent training, real estate investing, buyer and seller tips, and more. It's free beer and real estate.
What is up, everybody? We are going to tackle a tough, tough topic today. I deliberated on doing this, but I'm going to start you out with a scenario. So say a buyer calls you and says, hey, I saw this home with another agent, but we're not working with them anymore. We fired them and we want to work with you. And we want you to write up this offer on this house that we saw previously with another agent. What do you do? Who gets paid if that sale closes? This is the topic that we call and is known in our business as procuring cause. All right. So now with that teaser out there, get your wheels turning. Let's do some introductions. Hi, everybody. Mike Ferrante with Century 21 Homestar and the 21 Mike team. I run a team of about 40 agents all the way from Cleveland, Akron, Medina, down to Columbus. And we're hiring, so to speak. You know, if you're an agent and you're looking to grow your business, or maybe you're kind of stuck in a rut, or if you're looking to scale back, you know, we have agents on our team who are winding down and just want the support of having a team behind them. Definitely hit me up. You can email me, mike@21mike.com. You can also go to our website and schedule an appointment there. That one doesn't go directly to my calendar though. 21mike.com is a great place for scheduling an appointment with someone on our team. We're currently the number one team for Century 21 in the country in number of units and extending our lead, right, Tony? We just checked the numbers and that lead is getting bigger, which is a good thing. Tony Geraci, broker owner, is on with us. And he is the man as far as talking to someone about Homestar. I highly recommend. Tony is a wealth of knowledge, about 30 years in the business. Did I get that right, Tony? About 30 years?
Yes, just 2 weeks ago.
2 weeks ago.
Well, 30 years in a row.
Yeah, you know, that's interesting. You got licensed as a realtor, and that was back in, was it Smythe Kramer?
Yeah, actually, my first 6 months was with Coldwell Banker. Then okay. Went to Smythe Kramer for a few years. Gave Remax a try for about 2 years, and then started up on my own. So it's about, that was my first 5 years, and the last 25 years has been Homestar.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing. So Tony, broker owner, he focuses solely on helping agents and putting out fires. You know, but really Tony doesn't sell anymore. He's not one of those brokers that also takes listings and buyers and competes with his agents. You know, he's strictly here to help us succeed. And I think back about 15 years and getting started as a part-time agent, and Tony, you've been instrumental in growing my business and the team. It's been amazing. If you want to schedule with Tony, it's 216-374-1269. Text Tony and get on his calendar. You will not be disappointed. So let's get back into this topic. Tony, I think we should start kind of first with a definition of procuring cause. I think if you're in the business of real estate, you've heard the term and we kind of know that it's, hey, who gets paid? But, you know, can you give us sort of a definition of that and help clear it up for people?
Yes. Well, procuring cause, the basic simple definition is who was the first person or agent that got the people interested in the property by bringing them through the door, getting them information. It's anything that would get them to now make the decision to put an offer in on the home. And the little disclaimer I'll say is, and Mike, you know, we've both been through this plenty of times in our careers, is that it's technically up to the board to decide that, you know. So this is also, not to take up too much time with the description, this is one of the reasons why we pay dues. I always tell agents, because sometimes every year when we have those dues due, like what are all the reasons? And this is one of the top reasons for procuring cause. So when you're working with the buyer for 8 months, showing them every house, they don't just all of a sudden just ditch you at the last minute and have someone else write up the offer of a house you showed them, but you put all the time in. So this helps protect you, but we're going to go over things that helps explain it, and so you get don't get into these situations in a negative to you.
Exactly. And we'll get into some best practices. We'll talk about how to protect yourself, you know, to make sure that you do get paid. You know, one of the interesting things, Tony, is the procuring cause rule that everybody used to hang their hats on was that what they called the threshold rule. Who brought them over the threshold? Well, as we've recently learned, the board is not just hanging their hat on that anymore. They're looking at a whole picture. And so the threshold rule is really no longer the only thing that they look at. It's a chain of events that they look at. So just having shown someone a property doesn't necessarily guarantee that you would be procuring cause if there's a dispute over who gets paid. Now, the other thing that, Tony, I'm so glad you mentioned about the board, you know, think about it. It absent the board to help us resolve these disputes, you know, and commission is just one of them. You know, there's also ethics complaints and, you know, all kinds of other stuff that the board helps with. But absent them, what's our alternative? It's to go to court, and that's expensive. So when you think about it, the dues that we pay, some small portion of that goes to administer things like conflict resolution. And, you know, the people who sit on these committees, you know, professional standards. And I forget the one that is it professional standards that handles commission disputes, but those are usually not usually always unpaid volunteers, right, Tony? You know, and you know, I've done that.
Yeah, everybody. Right. Yeah, these are just other agents in our MLS in our area that volunteer. And when there is a and there's many that are on there. And also what happens is when we get into these situations, and something goes to the board, they sent both companies a list of everybody, and you could ask to have certain people excluded. Like example, if we had one with Century 21 and Mike, you're on that list, they're automatically not going to allow you to be one of the three members because you're part of our office and you might not be impartial. So hopefully you would, but but
you're right.
That's,
yeah, they
you
automatically
get to choose.
Yeah, they automatically exclude you if you're with the same brand as one of the parties in the dispute. So actually, let's start with that, Tony. And then I'll go back to my teaser story that I opened with, and we'll dig into that a little bit and talk about best practices. But that the end result of if everything else fails and you have this conflict with another agent and you're not agreeing on who the procuring cause is, it's pretty much like a trial. And Tony, like you said, you and I have been to a few of these, and you know, we always feel like we're right when we go there. But much like a trial, you kind of never know how it's going to end up. You know, the other side's going to present compelling arguments, things that you didn't think of. And it's never black and white. There's always some evidence for the other party that they were procuring cause.
Oh, yeah.
And of course, you present yours.
And also, exactly like the court system, you might have three people like a jury. If three, we've been in almost identical situations and been to the board, and three of the members choose our favor, and other times they've chosen the other person's favor. Even though we had that history, they might decide differently, like a jury. So.
Exactly. And the other thing to note, well, first of all, it's really important, and I want to just spend one more second on this. It's really important for agents to know that when you have this type of conflict, that this is our recourse. That's like the last step, though. We're going to talk about some other things that you can do to try to keep it from going that far. But the other thing to understand, one of the reasons you don't want it to go that far is because it's all or nothing. Typically, when you go to these hearings, that it's like a court case. You know, they don't find you 80% guilty or 70% innocent. It's yes or no, you win or you win. So it's all or nothing, 100% or nothing. I can't remember a case where they ever said, well, you each had some part, we're going to split it 50-50. No, this is like King Solomon, you know, going to cut the baby in half. No, they're going to either give this person the baby or that person the baby. So if you like the biblical reference there, Tony, not sure if you like that one or not, but you grew up Catholic, right?
Yep, exactly. I know what you mean.
Yep.
This podcast is brought to you by Mike Ferrante from Century 21 Homestar and the 21 Mike team, real estate agents serving all of Ohio. Whether you're looking to buy, sell, or you're an agent looking to partner with the number one team for Century 21 in the entire U.S., contact Mike via email at mike@21mike.com.
So it's really important, I think, for agents to understand that's the last alternative. It's always better to try to work it out with the other brokerage. And Tony, you're really good about that. You know, when there is some kind of overlap. So let's use the little picture, the little story I painted in the beginning. Buyer contacts you and says, "Ah, we fired our agent. We're not working with them anymore, but we saw this house. And Tony, we want you to write the offer on that house for us." On the surface, you might say, "Oh, well, they fired their other agent. I can just step in and take over and I'm good to go," right? Wrong. Tony, explain why.
Again, you don't know the whole relationship with the other buyer. So basically, that's what our board does. This rule protects you as the first agent, that your buyers just can't go just drop you for no reason. And you do all the work and then someone else comes in at the end. So to go, do you want me to go like in detail, like what I would say to an agent?
Absolutely. What you would say to an agent, and if you're that agent and that happens to you, what do you say to that client?
Sure. So basically the agent, this, let's say agent number two, and if that agent was with us, I have this conversation every couple months with an agent. I go, "Well, yes, the buyer can choose another agent to represent them now, but that first agent probably, I'm, you know, with 99% sure that they have procuring cause. If they have a relationship with them, they've shown them other houses for sure, and they showed them this house and have communications through text and email about this house and actually showed it to them. Then you could write up the offer, you know, Mr. or Mrs. Agent of mine, you could write up the offer, go ahead, but you might be doing it for free. Because if that first agent takes it to the board, they can take all the commission from us and you just did all that for free. Or you could reach out to the client and the other agent and try to work out something beforehand. Say, "Hey, how about a referral fee to you? How about something else? You know, and I definitely help out with that." But I always tell agents it's we're not really, you know, my disclaimer, my interpretation of our rules is we're not supposed to be talking about commission to buyers and sellers between us and the other agent. So we try not to get too deep with the client about our rules and who gets paid and things like that. So you got to dance on a little bit eggshells with that and not going into too many details, because I've had agents, buyers go back to the first agent, number one, start yelling at them and, you know, because they can't get you to do the deal for them. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Tony, you hit on so many good points there. So number one, we really need to dance around the whole commission conversation. We shouldn't be talking to our clients about that. You know, it's a necessary part of the business, but we don't want them to be embroiled in a conflict because we stirred the pot. So just like you said, Tony, we want to keep things amicable because, again, the alternative is this court-like, trial-like experience where it's all or nothing. So you hit the nail on the head. This is what I do with my teammates. If we inherit a client, look, and it's going to happen to you. So if you're on this call and you're listening to it and say, "Oh yeah, I got a client that way and everything worked out just fine," believe me, there will come a day where you do a bunch of work for a buyer and next thing you know, they're going to buy a house with someone else. And you never know, it might be a house that you showed them. So as the agent receiving that call, the scenario I painted where they say, "I fired our agent and I want to work with you," the first thing I would explain to them is say, "Look, you know, I need to have a conversation with your other agent in order to proceed. It's just the rules of our business. You know, we try to respect each other and make sure that we're not stepping on toes." You know, the first question I would ask is, "Did you have a written buyer's agreement with that agent?" And well, if they don't know what that is, dig a little deeper, really make sure you are uncovering whether or not they have a buyer's agreement. That should be step one. Step two should be to contact that other agent and just say, "Hey, wanted to let you know, Mr. and Mrs. Smith just contacted me and they're interested in working with me. Did you know that?" Sometimes the other agent is blindsided. They're like, "You're kidding. I thought things were going great with Mr. and Mrs. Smith." Okay. And again, we don't want to stir the pot, but this all needs to be resolved on the front end, right, Tony? We don't want to find out about this stuff at the hearing. You know, we want to uncover all these facts ahead of time. And just like Tony said, the best thing to do is try to work out a deal with that agent ahead of time. Hey, I'm going to start showing them houses. By the way, they did say, you know, 123 Main Street was a house you showed them. They still have some interest in that property. Should I sell them that property since you showed it first? Can I work out a referral fee with you and get that in writing? Anything to add, Tony?
No, that's perfect. The only thing that why some agents choose not to do that, and I know the number one reason, is that they don't want to lose the buyer. Now. You know, like, oh, if I call the other agent or talk to the buyer about the other agent, that they might go back to them, and I'm going to miss out on a buyer. Because in theory, again, it's kind of like gambling. It's rolling the dice. Like, because I've had this happen where agents write an offer up for the house that they want to, and it doesn't go through. And now they pick up a buyer and now they're showing them other houses and get the sale there. So I let the agent, I say, you got to decide which way to go. You know, I let give them all options of the experience we have with things and take it from there.
Yeah, I think the problem with not having the conversation ahead of time is, like you said, you're rolling the dice. What if you do all that work, you get it under contract, and then, you know, I'll tell you what isn't the right course of action. The right course of action is not to cross your fingers and hope that the other agent never finds out that you, that those people bought the house using you. Absolutely, don't do that.
Right. Oh yeah, and yeah, exactly. What a quick example is, I had an agent, but suppose the agent did not know any that this buyer saw a house, never contacted the other agent, nothing. And the our board rules are, you have 6 months up. I believe it's 6 months from the date of closing to file something. So 6 months later, their company filed this. It didn't go to the board. Excuse me. Until like another 6 months that we finally met. So it's a year after the sale, and it was like an $8,000 commission. And then the board favored for the first agent, and that agent had to pay the money back. This is a year after, and the money's gone already. It's not fun coming up with that commission. So we like to handle it, like you said, start talking about it now before you, you know, because it could be a year later you find this out.
Yeah. And to be clear, it's not always agent number two's fault. So that maybe the buyer came to them and doesn't say any of that. Hey, I found you on Zillow. I'm interested in this house. Would you, you know, we'd like to take a look at it. And they don't tell you they've already seen it once. And you just assume everything's peachy. Maybe you even sign your buyer's agreement with them. You write up the offer. And then months after closing, another agent comes out of the woodwork and says, hey, those were my clients. I showed them that house on this date. I showed them this house on April 21st. And all of a sudden they started ghosting me. You sold them that house. That's my commission. You know, and again, you know, you can kind of understand both sides of this here. Agent number two says, well, I did all the work. I should get paid. Agent number one may have invested 2 years with them. I mean, it's not unreasonable to think in this market, especially, Tony, that an agent might have spent 2 years working with that client, written multiple offers, and then just all of a sudden they decided, yeah, you know what? We need a different agent. So, you know, who's right? You know, you could see how complex this is. And when you look at it, it's like, it's not clear cut. Well, agent one or agent two gets it. That's why, Tony, you and I are of the same mind in that we're collaborative. We want to work something out. Wow, we understand. Let's work out something fair, because if it goes to what do they call it? Not arbitration, because that's the other thing, but if it goes to
mediation.
Oh, arbitration mediation. Is yes. Mediation. That's the other option. So Tony, why don't you explain real quick? You know, we're running short on time, but explain real quick what mediation is.
Sure. Mediation is usually the first step. You're trying to you meet with one person at the board, assigned mediator, and you kind of try to work it out. And that's in technically free service of the board. So you go there, you say, try to work it out. The board or the mediator doesn't makes recommendations, but can't make a judge. It's not going to make a judgment and force one side to do one or the other. And then if that doesn't even work out, then we go to arbitration, and whoever's bringing it to arbitration, is it $400 an hour? It was $200. I have to check, and I have we haven't been there, but is it $200?
$200 to $400. I can't remember the exact amount.
Sure. So whoever's bringing it to arbitration, that's when three members of the board would be there and actually make a decision. It's $200 to them. If they win, they get that money back. If you lose, you don't get that. You paid that money. So some agents don't, you know, it's kind of like, you know, if you, you got to be serious because you're putting money on the table. Back to the gambling analogy. Do you think you have a good case to win? Because if not, you're putting up to $400. And if you don't win it, you don't lose that money. So that's the two options you have.
Very good. Tony, that's a good summary. High level view today. So last thing I want to do is just a few tips, best practices on what agents should be doing to protect their right, you know, to protect the fact that they may have earned a commission on a deal. Number one on the list, number one on everyone's list should be to get a buyer's agreement. Really pursue that buyer's agreement. And especially if there was another agent involved, find out if they had a buyer's agreement and if it's still in effect. Has it been terminated? No different than if you had a listing that you were pursuing. You wouldn't go and sign another listing agreement with a seller until the current listing agreement expired, right? Same thing with buyers. Tony, so top tips, buyer's agreement, any others that come to your mind?
Of course, asking, like you said earlier, asking questions. You know, where did you find me? Have you seen any other houses? Have you been working with any other agents? What, you know, you got to ask questions, especially to people you don't know. So if you get them off the internet, like I got agents that have off the internet and things like that, they're probably talking to other agents. You didn't win the lottery. Like, wow, they picked me. I'm the first agent they've ever talked to, found me online or, you know, got a lead from somewhere. Just ask questions.
Yep. Now, another tip, document everything. So if you're scheduling showings, if you're scheduling showings, you know, showing time or, you know, the other showing services are great because everything's documented. You could pull up that report and say, I showed them that property on April 21st. But if you're showing a property, maybe that isn't using a showing service, or if there's an open house and you bring your people to an open house, you know, make sure you document that. You know, it could be something as simple as an email. You know, I see Michael Wendell's on the call. Michael, thank you so much for accommodating our showing today during your open house. The Smiths have the following feedback. We'll let you know if an offer is coming. Now, that's a documentation that I confirm that showing with Michael. And then later on, if there's a problem, believe me, you will be glad that you have that email. All of your documents, when you do write offers, you know, make sure you document all of that. Now, I don't want to get too far in the weeds here, but there's also a length of time. If you wrote an offer for someone 12 months ago, it's probably not going to hold up, right, Tony? I mean, we don't have a set number of days, but pretty much if the chain is broken, they say, then you no longer have procuring cause. Tony, in your experience, what has that length of time been?
Usually more, I would say more than a month, 2 months of break in communication. That's total communication. That means the first agent had to drop the ball and not try to call them or text them. Because some agent one has won the procuring cause because they said, I didn't break the chain. The buyers did. I kept on calling them. Here's my text message, checking in on them, see if they want to write an offer, and then decide to go to agent two. So the agent has to break the communication, if that makes sense.
100%. And that's a great place for us to end with that last bit of advice. Don't stop communicating with your people, because as soon as you stop and you give up, that's when you are probably out of luck should they pursue that property with another agent. Final thoughts, Tony.
Yeah, one last thing. Back to the beginning, I like the note, like when you were talking about agents making so much money. So I wanted to give another tip for the day when I train agents when they have this question. And anybody wants to contact me, we could have a longer discussion about this topic. Is the number one thing I express to buyers and or sellers, I tell agents, is that I don't charge anything. The reason why we make this a dollar amount, whatever it's going to be, is because we work for free. They're like, what do you mean you work for free? Yes, we work for free. You get to decide when I'm going to do all of this work, your listing. I'm going to do all of this work with you, buyer, for as long as you need me or under contract for free. And until we get to the point that you decide to buy or sell your house at a price agreeable to you to pay me my commission. So the reason why, because we have such an extreme, I'm either making zero or I'm making this, you know? So that's why we don't get paid per hour. Because that would be unfair. And sometimes sellers and buyers are, what do you mean? How would that be unfair? I go, what happens if I don't do my job? and you paid me thousands of dollars over a 6 months period, and I didn't do my job, and you're out that money, and you list your house with me for 6 months, I guarantee I'm only going to get paid if I do my job and get you to the finish line. So that's why there's an extreme of zero and that. And hopefully that gives you some talking points if anybody ever brings that up. Is that we charge this because I work for free, and that usually starts their brain moving like, what do you mean you work for free? Because they always think we get paid no matter what.
Yeah, I love that, Tony. I don't want to go down a too big of a tangent here, but you and I have had this conversation about attorneys. We feel that perhaps attorneys should only get paid when they win, right? Kind of like us. But I don't want to go there too much, right?
No, but that's what I'm joking. That's why they're smarter than we are, because they know they're not always going to win or do their jobs at the end. So they get paid per hour.
Yeah.
Where we say we only pay us when you're satisfied.
Yeah, that's a great point. So Tony, let's end it there. If you want to talk more with Tony, it's 216-374-1269. You can hit me up, mike@21mike.com. If you're watching this on YouTube, I really hope you love the content. Please post your comments below. I'd love to hear your stories about if you've had any procuring cause issues. And hopefully this topic isn't too taboo. I know it's one of those things that we don't talk about enough, and I really toiled over doing this today, but I really wanted to put it out there because I think it's important for agents to have this conversation. And again, just to recap, my number one tip is work it out, communicate, figure these things out before it turns into an arbitration. It's always better to have some kind of conversation about these things before they blow up and you have to appear in front of that board of three members. It is grueling. It is like being on trial. It really is. It's not a fun experience. So Tony, thank you so much for being here and dedicating your time every week. You know, we appreciate you sharing your knowledge with us. So thanks again.
Thank you, everyone. Hope to talk many of you very soon.
All right. Take care, everyone.
We hope you enjoyed Free Beer and Real Estate from Century 21 Homestar and the 21 Mike team. Please subscribe to our podcast and find us on YouTube by searching for Mike Ferrante, Cleveland Realtor. You will find videos, training, and even recipes from 21 Mike's Vegan Kitchen.